Hello and welcome to The Exit presented by Flippa. This is a 30-minute podcast featuring amazing entrepreneurs who have been there and they have done it. The Exit talks to operators who have bought and sold businesses of all different sizes. You'll learn how they did it, why they did it, and get exposure to the world of exits. It's a world occupied by a small few, but accessible to many. And on this special episode, I sit down with Harsh Patel. And this is a very, very special episode because not only has Harsh sold three businesses while CEO, but these are upwards of $165 million when the K-12 acquisition happened with Galvanize while he was the CEO. We talk about all different types of management lessons that he has learned over the years and all the different experiences he's had while starting through an acquisition, dealing with inbound acquirers coming to them, as well as going outbound and outreaching using an iBanker to do the whole process. We talk about time frames of how long it takes to go through, you know, from 2 to 3 to 4 months. And these are big numbers, which is really fun that Harsh really opens up and talks a lot about his learnings throughout these different acquisitions, all being different. And before we jump into this episode, be sure to watch the previous one with Jeremy Bell from Elevate. Fantastic episode and really worth checking out and listening in on. So without further ado, let's dive right into my interview here with Harsh Patel. All right, guys, I am joined today with Harsh Patel, the, I guess, CEO of the chief dad officer, I should say, of the Patel family. How's it going, Harsh?
It's going great as the new hire to our family, to be a new dad to the family. Doing good. You might hear him in the background.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. So we're going to dig into the multiple awesome exits that you've had. Harsh and I actually met back in 2015 when I was doing my first startup before my exit. And I'm really interested to hear about these because it's near and dear to me with education. And I'm really kind of eager. But before we get into it, let's hear a little bit about your background. What led you into co-founding Makersquare?
Before Makersquare, I was teaching. I was a teacher at Teach for America, and I taught middle school and high school math and science for a bit. Mm-hmm. Just middle school, fifth grade and eighth grade. I had started... After I taught for a couple of years, I'd started working on an app where we built software for teachers, essentially. I didn't know how to program at the time. And so I was managing a team of people that were writing the actual code for the web app. And I found myself just frustrated that I couldn't really contribute. And it felt weird. I was like, for the first time, like it feels weird to tell someone else what to do when you have no idea how to do it. So I just started teaching myself how to code on the nights and weekends. And over time, I ended up learning enough to be a junior dev type of, you know, skill set. And a friend of mine said, "Hey, I want to do this too. Would you recommend anything?" And I was like, "There's a couple, you know, resources here." I wrote down all the stuff that I used. And he was like, "Dude, we could start a school for this." And I was like, "Yeah, maybe." But I was really focused on just on the software that we're writing for teachers. But he really kind of dragged me into it. And he was like, "Hey, look, just come down to Austin. Let's put up a website and tell people that, we can do this for them." And we did. And, you know, in like 2 or 3 short weeks, a lot of people were just really interested. And we realized that we had hit something, because people were so interested. So then, you know, I quit working on that other thing and just started building Makersquare from there.
Got it.
That answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. And cool. You guys kind of created the website for Makersquare in Austin. You got a chance to get some early traction. Mm-hmm. What put you on the radar of Hack Reactor, which was a boot camp in San Francisco?
So we both were invited to the White House to talk about what we were doing. And there's a early on, and that's where we met them. I guess we'd known about them just because being in the industry, you kind of know who the other players are. Maybe you haven't met them, but you know about them. Mm-hmm. But we had met each other at the White House, and it was a panel that the Obama administration had put together about getting veterans jobs. And I realized that us and HackRact were the only ones that were really focused on that topic of like getting people the actual jobs. Everyone else was really focused on the business aspect of how this is such a big and growing industry. And we're just like, what? This is all about getting people jobs, right? And so we kind of, you know, did the look across the room like, ah, you guys get it to each other. And we just kept in touch from there. But it actually wasn't until we got an inbound offer from University of Phoenix to buy Makersquare. And, you know, we'd actually never considered selling the business. But they gave us an offer, and to be frank, we just didn't feel proud of selling to University of Phoenix. Had a really bad reputation at the time, and so we just said, "Hey, who would we like to work with?" So then we reached out to HackReactor and said, "Hey, we have this offer from these folks over here, but we don't really want to work with them. Would you guys be interested in matching or beating the offer? We'd love to work with you guys." And so it was actually us going to them and saying, "Hey, you want to do this?" And basically just bringing the whole offer to them. Yeah. And they were like, "Actually, we think we have shared values. Like, let's do it." So that's how that happened. And within a month, we had, you know, closed the deal, done the transaction, all that.
Got it. So, yeah. What was the transaction like for, you know, the team? Was it everybody on the executive team, all the teachers and everything, went over into HackReactor and started teaching their students? How did that work? Do you operate separately, or?
Yeah, we basically just operated separately. HackReactor was really big in San Francisco at the time, and Makersquare, we were in San Francisco and Austin, Texas, and we had plans to go to other locations. And so HackReactor was interested in us because we had already created two locations. We kind of knew how to make a multi-city bootcamp. Mm-hmm. Experience. And so we basically just operated independently and just grew. So then we created Los Angeles campus and New York campus. So our whole team stayed on, and it really was just, having more resources, more leads, because now it wasn't just people coming to makersquare.com. People coming to hackreactor.com would also learn about Makersquare. And so the whole team stuck around, and we just kept growing the business.
Got it. So,
and we grew it like 4x in the first year or something. It's crazy.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
So one of the interesting things about you, Harsh, that I really wanted to highlight is that these exits happened and then you became the CEO. multiple occurrences.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in how that happens. I think that's a fascinating like ladder to climb extremely quickly. So what was that like? Because you get acquired, you're operating separately, and then you become the CEO of HackReactor.
Yeah. So it was different both times. It at the time, like we were growing Makersquare, we're doing a great job. Like we'd get along with the founding team at HackReactor really well. It was almost as if like it was a combined team of just because we had shared values. That was like the big thing. The then CEO of HackReactor was getting a little burnt out. He'd been at it for a long time, and he found himself just getting frustrated, or not being his best self, in his own words. And you know, he asked if I'd be interested in taking on more responsibility. I was like, yeah, sure, why not? We're kind of already doing it. I know how to run an organization just because we'd been doing it. And so it was kind of natural in the sense that, he needed someone to step up, and I said, sure. And I don't know, a year, I spent like 4 or 5 months as COO, just getting to know the rest of the HackReactor team, getting them comfortable with me. And then from there, he stepped back even further and asked me to run it as CEO. And I said, sure. Because again, it felt really natural. We had, kind of already knew the whole team. The team knew me. And it wasn't like it was drastically different work from being CEO of Makersquare to HackReactor. It was just it's very similar stuff. And I think that the key is like the shared values, right? Like I shared the same values, which was basically get people jobs. Like that's all we cared about. And once you have shared values, you, it's a lot easier to put trust in people. And I think that's why, it was easy for Tony to say, "Hey, would you want to do this?" And for me to say, "Yeah, sure."
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. So this kind of brings us to the next exit that came across with Galvanize. So how did that occur when you become the CEO of Hack Reactor after selling Maker Square? How did the occurrence happen with Galvanize approaching Hack Reactor? Hey guys, Steve here, and taking a quick pause from the interview. I know that selling a business can feel unattainable and just out of reach for everybody, but it's definitely something that is very reachable for people that are listening to this podcast with Flippa. And I've mentioned that this show is presented by Flippa. They have over 3 million users on their platform who are looking to acquire everything from content sites to e-commerce stores to SaaS platforms or even mobile applications. So if you're curious and want to know more about what your business is worth, head to flippa.com/theexit for free valuations on your business. It takes a couple minutes to literally go through, and you can just go through the whole process without committing to anything at all. So once again, flippa.com/theexit, check it out, get evaluation on your business without any commitments, and just see exactly what your valuation of your business is worth. So let's dive into the interview.
So that was a different, you know, the first one with Maker Square to Hack Reactor, we went out to Hack Reactor and said, "Hey, you want to buy us?" Hack Reactor to Galvanize is very different. We ran a whole process. Like we got a investment banker who kind of shopped us around and tried to find a good partner, because we wanted to grow the thing, and we either needed additional capital or partner up with someone who had that capital. And so we ran what's called a process with a banker, and you know, created all the typical things you do in running a process, a deal deck and all the, you know, financials and all that stuff. And, did a ton of meetings with so many different PE firms, VC firms, strategic players. And, ultimately, Galvanize was the one that we felt like was going to be the best fit, and they felt like was going to be really good too. And so, they ended up, being the highest bidder, so to say, and were the best destination that we felt like, because they had all these locations all across the country with their co-working spaces. Mm-hmm. And so we thought it'd be really natural to put Hack Reactor inside of them. That's how that one came about. That one is like just a straight up run a process, and the highest bidder, if you like them, then you go for it. That's how we did that one.
Got it. And what was that kind of time frame where you bring in the iBanker, they do the process? What was that? What did that look like?
So probably from signing the papers with the iBanker to say, "All right, we're going to go with you," to signing the papers to close the deal, I think that was like 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
Got it. I have to look back my notes, but I'm almost certain it was somewhere between 4 and 6 months.
Okay.
So grueling months.
grueling months. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's a big move too, because you moved geographically as well, right? You went from San Francisco to Colorado, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So that one was big for the whole team. And that was actually a really tough integration as well, after they bought us, because I didn't know this at the time, but in hindsight, what I learned is, I think they really wanted Hack Reactor to be the education program for Galvanize. But that wasn't clear to anybody within the company. It wasn't our place to say, "Hey, we're the new guys. Like we want to, you know, we're supposed to, grow within Galvanize." And so it was a really tough integration, because the expectations were not set on the Galvanize side of what the goal and plan was for the acquisition.
So you go through the iBanker, you get the process done, you get up and move to Colorado, you join Galvanize, you start there as, is it COO? What was your initial kind of?
I was chief product officer.
Okay.
So that was my official title at Galvanize when we first went over there.
All right. And then you once again start the quick jump to CEO. So I know there's
that happen.
Yeah. How did that happen? Once again,
this one was very different. This one was and to be totally transparent, this was a, hey, this isn't working out for me anymore. I think I'm going to leave type of situation because of that really tough integration where the expectations weren't set. And so I felt like I was the odd person out on that team. Just cause I felt myself getting frustrated with how things were happening. But that management team kind of, they had their thing going, and I was like, I don't need to change your mind. Seems like I'm the one that doesn't fit. I'm out. And, you know, put a whole kind of like 3-4 month long, exit plan together and all that stuff. But then when the board of Galvanize found out that I was leaving, you know, it's always a problem when the company who you just acquire, their CEO is leaving. And so the board was like, whoa, why are you leaving? I was like, hey, it looks like I'm the one who doesn't really belong here. Things aren't going the way that I was hoping. And I don't really want to, you know, cause a big ruckus to change the way that everyone's doing everything. It seems like there's a plan here. So I'm going to leave. And, you know, to make a long story short, the board basically said, no, we actually want you to stay. And we want you to run this thing, and we want to change management teams, and we want you to kind of bring on your own people to lead this combined organization. And we'll say goodbye to the previous leadership team. And again, I was like, frankly, I'm humbled, but I'm not interested to do that. Because I already decided that I was leaving. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to make a second long story short, they said, basically said, no, please, we would really like your help here. And I said, all right, you know, happy to do it. But I need a bunch of latitude to hire the right people and make the right calls about what we're going to do, what we're not going to do, all that stuff. And so I ended up saying, yeah, but that one is very different. That was a board saying, hey, we don't want our current team. We want you instead. And so, you know, again, very different than the other time. So I don't know if there's any patterns here, to even pull out in hindsight, just because there's such different situations.
Yeah. Yeah. So K-12, comes in, and were you in the CEO role when K-12 came in, and what was that? What was that transaction like?
So that one was, interestingly, very different than Makersquare to Hack Reactor and Hack Reactor to Galvanize. This was totally different. This was we weren't even for sale. And I was speaking at a conference, telling people about Galvanize and what we were doing. And one of the people in the audience was one of the corp dev folks from K-12. And, you know, they talked to me afterwards and they said, hey, we really like, we want to get into this type of work. And it seems like you guys are big enough, high quality enough, and your team seems great. We really want to talk to you about an acquisition. And that was kind of inbound, so to say, unsolicited type of thing. And, you know, I meant it at the time, but I responded by saying, hey, no thanks. Like we're in the middle of building this thing. We just got a brand new team. I was just hired as CEO. Like we've got a plan and, you know, we've got a 2-3 year long plan. Here's what we're up to. And thanks, no thanks. Maybe let's talk in a couple of years when we've kind of executed on our plan. Mm-hmm. And I think anytime you say that, you make yourself even more desirable, right? Anytime you say no, it's better. So even though that wasn't the plan, that was just the truth. The team got more and more interested in us. And so I basically told them, I said, look, here's our plan. Here's what we're doing. And they said, could you accelerate it if you had more capital? And we said, absolutely, actually. And so that whole story was about K-12 wanting to get into this business. They had capital that they wanted to deploy to get into this business. And so they bought us and invested into the company to grow it faster. And so that was a inbound, whereas Makersquare Hack Reactor was outbound. The Galvanized one was, or the Hack Reactor to Galvanized one was a run a formal process. Mm-hmm. And then Galvanized to K-12 was totally inbound, unsolicited.
Wow. Because the K-12 one, from what I saw, 165 million,
big one.
That's a big one. So what, I mean, how long does a deal that large take? Because I know we went.
That one took 3 months.
3 months. Okay. Yeah.
And here's what I learned about making a deal go quickly. That one took, I was just looking back at my notes. October something, late October, something like that, was the first time that I even talked to their CEO. So that's what, October to November, November to December, December to January. So yeah, 3 months from first email to deal closed. The way to make it go quick is to set your expectations up front. I told them, here's the price that we would need for me to get all of our investors on board, all the management team on board, and for everyone to be happy about it. And so I gave them a price. I also gave them a timeline. I said, we're only interested in even talking to you guys if you commit that we can do this in 2 or 3 months. Like, we're not interested in being distracted for 2 months and then this ends up not happening. Mm-hmm. And I said, here's all of our skeletons up front. Let me tell you all the reasons why you'd want to say no to buying us, because you're going to find these out anyway. So let's just do it right now. And then we don't have to waste any time if you say no. And so if you do those three things, and it seems straightforward in hindsight, just tell them how much you want to be sold for, how long you want it to take, and tell them all the bad stuff first. It makes things go a lot faster. And that's what we did.
Got it. Transparent, upfront to speed.
Totally upfront, totally transparent. Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. So,
and it builds really good rapport with your acquirer too, because you're straight up about everything. And when they're doing their due diligence, they're not finding anything, you know, a few things here and there that maybe we didn't even know about, or we didn't think were important or something like that. But for the most part, you do the diligence and it ends up being like confirmatory diligence is what it's called, rather than terms escaping my mind right now, but rather than like digging through everything to sniff out every bad thing that could happen, it's more so, okay, we already know these bad things. Let's just confirm that there's no more. Mm-hmm. And so it makes the diligence process a lot easier too.
Got it. So let's say someone's listening or watching this and they have been running a business, they're doing a Makersquare, let's say, you know, they haven't done an exit before. What do you think the right time to exit is? This is always something that people ask.
When you don't want to do it.
When you don't want to do it.
Well, actually, it depends on what you're optimizing for. If you're optimizing for price, do it when you don't want to do it. Like if you find yourself saying, I'm not ready to sell this business yet, and you want to optimize for exit price, that's exactly when you should sell it.
Got it.
Because that, you know, generally things are probably going well if you're not interested in selling.
Mm-hmm.
And when things are going well, people are going to pay a higher price. So that, you know, that's my number one piece of feedback is sell it when you don't want to.
Got it.
But if you're optimizing for, but that's only if you're optimizing for, you know, the exit size, which is what most people try to optimize for. But you know, if you're running a lifestyle business and you're optimizing for a quick transaction and you're not really that worried about, you know, I don't know, making 8 million instead of 10 million, like you're fine with whatever that price range is, then, you know, the right time to sell is when you're ready. Like whenever you're ready to walk away from the business or when you're ready to give away the business. So I think it just depends. First, you got to ask yourself, what am I optimizing for? Am I optimizing for the biggest price? Am I optimizing for the best home? What am I optimizing for? And once you know that, then your next steps are different.
That's a good segue into kind of the constant that you saw across all these exits. Was there something that you did each time that set you up for success? Obviously, that last bit where you said we just had all the skeletons out front, that was a great knowledge nugget for people. That's like, okay, this is how I can lead the conversation with a potential acquirer. But what would you recommend as something that someone could consistently do to make it so that they're on a silver platter, I guess you could say, or is that not?
Yeah. I mean, you got to have your stuff like clean and easy to communicate. So like, make sure you've got a good looking deck, you know, pay the, you know, extra dollars to get a designer to go through it and clean things up. That's some of like the tactical stuff, but the commonality amongst all of them is really just to be straightforward with people. Don't try to play games, or don't try to like, you know, hide anything, or, you know, try to communicate something in a disingenuous way. My experience with all three of them are just like, if you're straight up and if it's meant to work, it's going to work.
Got it.
And if you're straight up and it doesn't work, it wasn't going to work anyway. There's nothing you could have done. And so I always find that don't try to be around the bush, just straight up know what you want. And the other thing is, the following piece of information is true for the K-12 acquisition and the original Hack Reactor acquisition, which is know your number and communicate it. Like, I'm not a big fan of playing games back and forth. Like, what would you want to play for it? I'm not going to tell you until you tell me, all that like kind of gamesmanship. If you just walk in and say, here's what I want for the business, you just speed things up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said. Well said. So the finale question that I ask everybody, just to have one kind of consistent question, is, knowing what you know now, what would you tell Harsh 10 years ago, just in general?
Oh man.
It's a good kind of generalized question, but a lot of people really,
yeah,
the perspectives.
I'd have to think about what I was trying to optimize for, but let's assume I was trying to optimize for the biggest exit amount every time. Just optimize for what could we have done to make it worth even more and sell for even more. That's the only thing even though I actually don't think that ends up mattering right now. But let's just assume that that was the goal of this exercise. I think I'm now a believer in, you know, just make sure you have month over month growth every month, or maybe if monthly is not your metric, then every quarter or every year, whatever the right cadence is for your business. And you don't need to have explosive growth the first month and kind of, but put everything on fire just to get to that gigantic growth number. And then you got to sift through everything. And then you still grow, but you grow slower the next month. Like, that's terrible. You always want to grow more than you did the previous month at a rate faster than the previous month. And so, cause that compounds. And so I would actually kind of say, do it slow and steady, but make sure you grow. You don't have to blow it out of the water the first year and then be stuck picking up pieces from all the mistakes you made or things you didn't focus on. And then all of a sudden your growth slows or something like that. Just take it easy, grow little bit by little bit. And that's going to make it much easier to sell your business.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's all the questions I have for you. Where can people go and follow you on social media?
I haven't really put much focus in it, but so it's almost even, I'm embarrassed to say it's it's a Twitter handle one of my friends created for me that just kind of stuck. Harsh on Internet on Twitter. That's where you can find me.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Harsh, sharing your experiences. This is a really special one because there's just so much here, multiple exits. It's a very special treat. So thank you so much for coming on.
You got it. Thanks for having me. Hopefully it was helpful for people.